Fasten your seatbelts. You're locked and loaded with Matt Forner. This is the Matt Forner Show.
Welcome to the Matt Forner Show. If you haven't guessed yet, I'm Matt Forner. It's so great to be here with you today for episode number one. I've been wanting to start a podcast for quite some time, and finally today, I sat down, bit the bullet, hit record, and here we are. Now, you're probably wondering what this whole radio show and podcast is going to be about. It's really the number one question I've been getting from friends and family members and close acquaintances for the past couple of months. And here's the fun part, the good news. It's not going to be about just one thing in particular. It's going to be about quite a number of things. We're going to discuss current events, news, politics, history, what's going on around the globe, including diplomacy and international relations. We'll even discuss the culture wars, religion in America, as well as global business, including marketing, public relations, and advertising. Then we'll take a deep dive and look at philosophy, beliefs, values, morals, and ethics. We're going to discuss what it means to be an American, what it means to live in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world. From time to time, we'll even touch on some lighter topics, including travel, sports, and my favorite movies and TV shows. So strap yourself in and let's take a ride. This is the Matt Forner Show. So I thought I would start episode number one by talking just a little bit about myself, talking about some of my beliefs, where I'm coming from on this podcast and radio show, kind of the angles that I'll be taking, and hopefully you understanding where I'm coming from the beginning can help you understand why this show will have the slant that it has. So I'm definitely someone who is center-right. I'm definitely someone who is on the right side of the spectrum. I believe I'm quite libertarian. I'm definitely a conservative if you want to look at the political compass. But that doesn't mean that I don't have any liberal beliefs. I'm definitely a classical liberal. I strongly believe in civil liberties. I believe in the rule of law and economic freedom. I believe that we should look at classical liberalism and we all should be classical liberals, no matter if we're a conservative or a progressive. I believe that we should be classical liberals and believe in the idea of liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit in our own lives of happiness, however that is, as long as it doesn't infringe on others. And of course, that's where everyone gets mixed up. But that doesn't mean that I have no farther left or progressive beliefs. For example, I believe that felons, those who have served their time in prison, those who have atoned for their crimes in the public, who have done their time, they should be able to vote. And the reason I believe that is I think that people who go through that atonement, those people who go through the punishment and are living back in society, they should have something to fight for and have something, some skin in the game, just completely saying that their beliefs and their worldviews and their input into society doesn't matter because of a crime that they committed maybe 5 or 10 or 25 years ago. I don't think they should be held back and feel they have no voice in society because of that. I'm also a huge proponent of harm reduction. I'm a proponent of looking at drugs. I'm legalizing marijuana for sure, but also looking at drugs and being realistic with drugs, realizing that they're going to exist. And instead of criminalizing all drug behavior, we instead work to encourage people to not use drugs. And if they are addicted to drugs, instead of just throwing them in jail and locking them up for that addiction, looking at harm reduction techniques that can lessen the effects of that drug addiction, whether that means counseling or therapy or even providing them clean needles in some situations. I think we should look at that, because purely saying that all drugs should just be criminalized no matter what kind they are, and that criminalization of drugs is going to work in all scenarios, I don't buy that. I'm not for that. And so I definitely believe that when it comes to drugs, whether they are soft drugs like marijuana, or maybe even some harder drugs like cocaine and definitely heroin and whatnot. We should work to lessen the effects of that. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to punish the dealers, the cartels, those that are pumping the drugs into society, but I definitely think the individual users, unless they're selling, should definitely be far more cared about in a health manner instead of a criminal behavior. One of the other more liberal policies that I definitely sit on is the death penalty. I believe that the state should not be able to terminate someone's life. I don't believe in the death penalty. I don't think we need that. It's 2020, and we should be able to lock people up, and sometimes locking them up for many, many years does more good in that situation than just ending their life. I also think we need to look more into rehabilitation, to rehabilitating some of these offenders, some of these first-time offenders for sure, and look more in that way. And that definitely leads me into a more conservative position that I have, and that's being pro-life. I'm definitely pro-life, and when I'm pro-life, it's not just pro-life in terms of abortion, but it's also pro-life in I don't believe the government should be able to terminate someone's life if they've committed a really bad crime. Do I think they should be ostracized and removed from society for committing murder or certain kinds of rape and whatnot? Absolutely. I definitely think so. But I don't believe that it should be the right of the state to end someone's life. I just don't agree with that. I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's the job of the government to be able to kill someone. If I had to point out where I became more conservative, I was always raised religious. I was always raised as a Christian. So that conservative, that Christian conservative part of me has always been there. But there was definitely a few years at the end of college, I would say, and even for the past, I would say the past 2 years, where I dabbled a little bit farther in more left-leaning circles. But I think at the end of the day, I've really found myself to be a conservative. I found myself to believe that the United States is really the greatest nation on the face of the earth. I've had some amazing opportunities in my life of traveling. I've been able to travel to Europe. I spent about 4 weeks in Europe back in, what year was that? Had to be 2018, where my brother and I, over the Christmas and New Year's holidays, traveled all over Europe, mostly Western and Central Europe, and just had an amazing opportunity to be able to do that, to take that time and see an amazing continent. I've had the ability to travel to South America, where my fiance lives in Argentina. I had the ability to travel to Asia, to South Korea and Thailand. And I can say for sure that the United States, we are blessed with the system that we have in the United States of America. We really are the most free country in the world. When you visit here, you can see that. Honestly, I push you to travel to other countries. Do some other countries have freedom? Do other countries have economic freedom or social freedom? Absolutely. I'm not putting that down. But in totality, the freedom that we have in America, the freedom to really go in any direction you want, to have a blank slate from the time you were born, to be able to succeed greatly in this country, we have something amazing in America that I can tell you right now, other countries just don't have. And if you want to talk deeper on it, I'll definitely talk deeper on this subject. I can point out examples from my time traveling, whether it was in Europe or South America or Asia. I can give you examples of the freedom that we have in America that we have to cherish, that we have to enjoy and love and respect. Because if we don't really build up America, if we don't work at setting those foundations and setting those good foundations in our country, they can go away in just a short time, in maybe one or two generations. So we have to really consider that. We have to nurture and build up the freedom that we have in the United States and not take it for granted. Now, I've gotten questions quite a few times where I am on the spectrum in terms of conservatism. Am I a neoconservative? Am I a paleoconservative or more of a nationalistic conservative? And I think when it comes to that, I'm kind of in the middle. I definitely have some neoconservative viewpoints. I don't believe in total isolationism. I don't believe that we should just retract ourselves from the entire world to pull back and not have anything to do with what's going on outside of our borders. I think that's foolish. It's foolhardy. I don't think that's how the world works. Part of the reason that China has been militarily not dominant is because the United States has such a large presence in the Pacific, whether it's in the northern and eastern parts of the Pacific Ocean or in the South Pacific region. The United States flexes its muscles militarily, and there's a reason why China has not stepped up and, for example, just invaded Taiwan with no problem, or why North Korea hasn't just invaded South Korea. There are reasons why China and other countries have, especially China for sure, that's the main one I'm talking about here, hasn't gone on the offensive. Now, I am an institutionalist. I think that we have to embrace organizations, including NATO. I mean, NATO exists for a reason. There is a reason that NATO exists, and Russia is an adversary. That doesn't mean that we have to have a horrible relationship with Russia. I mean, come on. They are a beautiful culture. They have an amazing history as a country. They really do. They have a very dark and sad history. But we should want other countries to succeed as well, not just the United States. Now, does that mean we should put every other country's interest before our own interests? No, I don't believe that either. But we should want other countries to succeed, because if other countries succeed, then we ultimately succeed economically as well. When it comes to isolationism versus just being everywhere in the world, I'm probably a little more on the neoconservative side, and I think that we have to be in the world to influence the world. I would say I'm pretty solidly an interventionist in a lot of ways, but I'm also an isolationist in some ways as well, and I'll explain that further. I also believe in some social conservatism, though. I definitely believe in some traditional conservative measures, and I don't think you can have an economy with no guardrails at all, an economy that is just allowed to go free with no kinds of restrictions, or, you know, that word is really escaping me right now, but an economy with no guardrails on it, with no regulation, that's the word I'm looking for. I think we have to have some regulation, and sometimes the government may need to use that force for regulation. It might need sometimes to enforce those antitrust laws. It might need to enforce harsher penalties on a wide variety of issues. We have to think about that, and we have to think, for example, in like the Huawei scenario, our national security should be one of our top priorities as a country, and for no reason should Huawei be able to operate in the United States, or for TikTok to be able to operate in the United States completely unfettered with no regulation and with no real oversight when it's collecting data on millions upon millions of Americans. I believe there was a study out a while ago that 1/3 of all Americans have TikTok downloaded on their phones. And to me, I'm not a big TikTok user. I've been on it a few times, but for 1 out of every 3 Americans to be on TikTok, and then really the Chinese government having the opportunity or the ability to collect data, including every single thing you search for on your phone, all of your locations, all of your contacts, your friend lists, all of that, to give a company like TikTok that ability, I just think is nuts. And I think in some ways we should flex our economic muscle and say, no, look, you have to bring your headquarters here in the United States where we can actually give that oversight, where the government, if needed, can look at that data with a court order and with court cases and say, look, if you are collecting data on millions upon millions of Americans, 1/3 of the American population, some stuff is just wrong and we're not going to allow it. And I also think they should do that for other companies as well, including some of our biggest tech companies. I think there's a problem there when it comes to advertising and having as much advertising background information as they want on you. I think that that's just not right. And I am a big proponent, honestly, in VPN services. You should use them. This is not an ad for a VPN service. I use ExpressVPN and NordVPN. I prefer those. They're kind of like the top of the top when it comes to VPNs, but I would say, honestly, go download it, use it, because when it comes to other people snooping on your data, especially advertisers who just want to sell you more and more and more, you should probably look into where all that data is going, because they have some pretty scary amount of data on you that you would probably never know about. That whole spiel probably made me sound quite authoritarian, but I'm not. I am a big believer in free market capitalism. I definitely think the capitalist system in the United States of America has brought so many millions of people out of poverty. When you look at capitalism around the entire globe, capitalism has done so much for the world. It has really taken people out of poverty. Does that mean poverty doesn't exist? Absolutely not. But let's look at the global percentage of poverty and look at the data from 1800 to just recent past. Poverty has fallen from over 80% of the world living in poverty in 1800 to now just 20% living in poverty, according to the United Nations in 2015. That's a pretty big drastic move, and it comes from the Industrial Revolution. It comes from capitalism and free market capitalism giving the opportunity for people to completely change their lives. That's something capitalism has done. I hope that clears up some of the questions about who I am and what I stand for. I mean, there's so many issues. There's really just an assortment of issues. What are all the issues? We have quite a few. We have the economy, we have healthcare, education, terrorism, and national security. We have social security, which, by the way, we really have to fix social security and look at that, because the numbers are saying that if we look at it, it's actually going to go bankrupt, I believe, by 2022 or 2023. So we should probably keep that in mind. Of course, that also leads us to Medicare, the poor and the needy, and charity versus forced support of those individuals. We have taxation, which we should really think about, and how we're doing taxes on that. I will say right now, I'm totally in favor of a flat tax. I just think that's the best way to go. I can do a whole podcast on the flat tax, and we'll save that for later, though. Some other topics are immigration and immigration reform, and looking at immigration, I think that's going to be one of the big topics of the next 2 or 3 years, is a real immigration policy. I think that's what's going to be looked at. I also think we need to look at unemployment and jobs, crime, and what's happening in some of our biggest cities. I mean, I call Chicago home, not Chicago downtown, but the Chicago suburbs is where I live. I used to live in the city of Chicago, and I can tell you right now, some areas are really safe. If you visit, you feel totally safe in some areas, and some areas you really just don't want to leave the highway. Let's be honest. There's some areas of Chicago that are just not great, and our murder count is far too high. That can lead us into a whole nother issue, like guns and gun rights and the Second Amendment. I'm a big, big believer in the Second Amendment. I think we have to take that one seriously. I think we need to balance the Second Amendment with other rights as well, but I'm a Second Amendment believer. I think that guns need to be in the hands of citizens. I don't believe that criminals should be able to get guns no matter how easily they want to. For example, in Chicago, if you are a law-abiding citizen, and I was actually just purchasing a new rifle recently, and I was looking at the laws in Illinois. Illinois gun laws are completely nuts. They're just completely nuts. It's crazy. Some of the most harsh gun laws. I started out applying for a FOID card back at the end of, I can't remember exactly, it was back at the end of February or the beginning of March. I'm in 2020, beginning of March or the end of February 2020, and applying for this FOID card, the Firearm Owner's Identification Card, and I waited, and here I'm waiting, and literally on the last day of October, I get it in the mail. I mean, that's just nuts. Think about that. I can't go out and purchase any kind of firearm to protect myself, but any criminal can go across the border in Indiana and pick up a stolen gun or buy a gun without a serial number on it and completely can do whatever they want. But me, someone with no kind of criminal record has to wait almost 9 months for a ID card with a background check to even be allowed to purchase a firearm. For me, that's just crazy. And so I was going to the store to go purchase this firearm. And of course, when you apply for a FOID card, they do a background check on you. I believe part of that process is they do a federal background check on you when you're getting the FOID card. And then they also do a state background check on you to make sure you're not going to pop up any state databases for a felony or for anything like that. And guess what? I'm purchasing the firearm and they say, well, now you got to do another state background check to purchase this firearm. And that's going to take 8 more days because the state is way backlogged, I guess, in every single capacity. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so I want a FOID card, which includes at least one federal background check. I'm sure it's a state background check as well to get that FOID card, which is supplied by the Illinois State Police. And now when I buy the gun, I have to go through another background check and wait even more days. I mean, come on. At what point is it an infringement on rights? At what point is it too much regulation? Because to me, that's just a little bit much. And we can talk gun rights. We can talk Second Amendment rights. I think that some things like the federal assault weapons ban, I don't know fully what I think on that. I have a couple of opinions. I don't know if I'm ready to share it right this exact second. I want to read up on it some more and kind of form a more educated view on that subject. But I'll tell you right now, I don't think we should have fully automatic weapons in the hands of citizens. I call those actual assault rifles. I don't call a pistol that shoots 10 rounds, I don't consider that at all an assault rifle. I don't consider an AR-15 that looks like a mean, bad gun to be an assault rifle, because they're not. They shoot just as fast as that pistol. They shoot just as fast as a semi-automatic rifle or a shotgun that's semi-auto, and that's not an assault rifle. So I think we need to like relook at some of these issues. But I think we should also look at other issues, and going down the list as well, we should look at drug addiction issues and harm reduction. Yes, race relations matter. We should look at race relations in America. Doesn't mean we have to make that our number one issue at all times. I don't think that. I think when you really boil it down, most Americans today get along pretty well. I think it's the media and political parties that definitely stir up a lot of the resentment, the polarization. I think we have to look at that more. I also want to look at our military. Where are we in the world? What are we doing? We should look at transportation. I am a big supporter in high-speed rail. I'm sure I will do an entire podcast on this topic coming up. High-speed rail is really, really important. High-speed rail is what I believe can help really push America into the future. It's a huge infrastructure project. It will create tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs all across America. So I'm a big believer in high-speed rail. I think it's also good for the environment. We should consider it. I love flying. Don't get me wrong. I'm an aviation nerd. My dad works in the aviation field. He works on corporate aircraft and private jets. But I think we should consider high-speed rail as a much better alternative when it comes to mid and short-distance travel. If you're traveling from Chicago to St. Louis, or Chicago to Minneapolis, or Chicago to Indianapolis, or Chicago to Detroit, for example, those are just a number of locations, or Chicago to Louisville even, I think we should really consider high-speed rail as a viable alternative. It just doesn't make sense to take a 30-minute plane ride or a 45-minute plane ride when at the end of the day, it's not going to be a 30 or 45-minute airplane ride. You're going to be standing in line unless you have TSA pre-check and or global entry or whatever. You're going to be standing in line for at least half an hour before your flight, and then maybe you'll be waiting for your bag, and it's going to be another 30 minutes. At the end of the day, high-speed rail is great because it gets you to those densely populated areas far quicker, far easier, and you can also get work done. Let's be real. If you're taking a 45-minute flight, you're going to be in the air for about 10 minutes, take out your laptop for about 10 minutes, and then have to close that laptop, and you really get no work done. Whereas if you're really talking high-speed rail, you're talking about like a two-hour train ride where you can actually get work done. And in a lot of those short-distance scenarios, that high-speed rail is going to be not only cheaper, better for the environment, but it's also going to allow you to get more done and even be a lot more time-sensitive for you, getting you not just to and from the airport. Think about that, too. If you live in Chicago, O'Hare Airport, Midway Airport, they are outside of the city. It can take you to get from downtown Chicago when traffic is hell. It can literally take you an hour to get to O'Hare Airport. It can take you just as long, maybe not just as long, but maybe about 30 minutes or so to get from downtown Chicago to Midway if traffic is stop and go. If you're leaving Union Station in Chicago in a high-speed train, you are blasting out of there way faster than you would have been if you were having to go and take a taxi or drive to the airport somehow, or even think about it, public transportation. Come on, are you really going to take a bus from downtown Chicago or from somewhere in the suburbs? Are you going to take it to one of the airports? That's going to take even longer. It's funny because I was picking up my fiance once at the airport, and of course, I'm going to drive there to pick her up. She was flying from Buenos Aires to either Miami or Buenos Aires to Atlanta, and she was flying, had an early morning flight from Atlanta after that overnight flight, and she was flying into Chicago. And I looked up, just for the fun of it, how long would it take on public transportation to get from where I was living on the far north side of Chicago, how long would it take to get to O'Hare Airport? And it was like an hour and 45 minutes or something like that, and it took only 25 minutes to drive. I mean, come on, let's think about that. Let's really think. Public transportation has to be realistically fast. It has to be realistically speedy enough where it's easy, it's clean, and it's affordable. It has to be that, because you know, that's important. I think people should really think about that. Almost last but not least, another topic that we should all consider and talk about is climate change. Climate change is real. It exists. But I think to the extent that some people say it does, I don't agree with that. I don't think that the United States alone can tackle this issue. I also don't think that the Paris Climate Accord goes far enough. The reason why, and it's kind of the reason I think that the Paris Climate Accord is a little bit of a joke, is because it doesn't force the top polluters in the world, which are China and India, to actually follow suit with the United States and stop polluting. When you look at the list of top 10 countries that are polluting, absolutely the United States is on that list. But when you look at China, you look at India, you look at Russia, Japan, Germany, a lot of these other countries aren't going to do as much as the United States is going to do when it comes to that. And I think really we have to look at that. If the United States is going to be a part of the Paris Climate Accords, we should agree that China and India should follow the exact same standards as the United States when it comes to pollution and what we are allowed to pollute and what we are allowed to put into the environment. You know, for example, China will get away with saying that they are a developing nation. And this is the funny part. Anyone who's traveled to China, and I haven't traveled personally to China, I know a number of people who have, always come back and say China is far more advanced. Look at China. Look at all of these massive cities. You know, the city of Chicago, yeah, in China, they have 10 cities of Chicago. They have like three or four New York cities in terms of population. You know, there's Shanghai and Beijing and Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Hong Kong. There's all of these cities that are polluting. And that's not even in, like, you go back into like the interior of China, like Chengdu, and you look at these other cities in China, and they are so polluted compared to the United States. I mean, literally, you can't leave your house without wearing a mask because it is so polluted. You don't want to breathe that air. And China, how they will get out of having to sign the same restrictions in the Paris Climate Accords is they will say, oh, we're just a developing country. We are not a first world country. And that just doesn't jive with all the reality that exists. I mean, in some ways, they're actually more technologically advanced than we are. They basically pay in a lot of these cities for all of the services through their cell phone. They just tap their cell phone to a QR finder, or they tap their phone to one of these little portals, these near field finders, and bang, the money debits their account. It goes out of their bank account. It pays for what they need. They do all of their credit reporting, everything on their phone. I mean, literally, they're more advanced than we are. And to get out of these UN policies, to get out of the Paris Climate Accords, they'll say, no, you know, we're still developing. When you look at a country like India, I can understand the argument that they are less developed than China. They really are a developing nation. But when you look at China, I don't know. I just don't buy that. China, for sure, is not a developing nation. It is a full-throated, futuristic country. It is on par with the United States. It is on par with the United States in so many ways. And just expecting that China is going to be totally okay and go along with the Paris Climate Accords and follow everything exactly how it is, like the United States would be held to, it's just bogus, and we should be considering that when we sign these climate deals. So do I think that climate change matters and is happening and we should work to reduce our carbon footprint? Absolutely. Do I believe that we should sign silly deals that in a lot of ways don't do that much and don't actually hold other countries to that same standard? No. If we're going to be having to put our businesses through a lot of hell and a lot of regulation, then why should China not be able to have to do that as well? They should be forced to do that just as much as the United States and just as much as India and Russia and other countries. So that's just a little preview of what this whole show is going to be about. We are going to talk about a variety of topics. It's not going to be about just one thing every single day. And I'm not sure how often I'm going to do this show. I'm going to kind of gauge it by interest. I might do it once a week to start with, or I might do it twice a week, or maybe if it gets really popular, I'll do it every single day. I'll put out a 30-minute or 1-hour episode every single day. I'm not sure yet. We're going to have to see how popular it gets. What's the feedback? What do people think? What do they want? What is the market bear? And right there, we'll see what the situation is. So I appreciate you checking us out. If you'd like to get more involved in the show, if you'd like to support the show, I do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/Matt Forner. That's patreon.com/Matt Forner. You can join, give however much you want per month, whether it's $1 or $2 or $5 or $10. I'm just setting up my Patreon account where you can support the show. I would appreciate it. I'm making this one of my main gigs, and I'm really excited about where this podcast is going to go in the long term. If you'd like to interact with me on an even more exclusive level, I am setting up our own community. It's going to be mattfornerradio.locals.com. You can join that community and sign up today. Locals was founded by Dave Rubin, a classical liberal, the host of The Rubin Report on YouTube, a great show I've been following for at least 2 years. It's a fantastic, fantastic YouTube show, and it just went through a change. I encourage you to go check out Dave Rubin, check out locals.com, but it's mattfornerradio.locals.com. I'm going to be posting videos, and we can be doing maybe once a week behind the scenes video where I can get my webcam on and we can chat, talk about politics in a way that's not just this podcast and radio show, but that's maybe a little more intimate, a little more exclusive for those top members, those fans who are really enjoying this podcast. So go check me out on Locals. I'm not sure how I'm going to take it yet. I'm thinking of also starting a written blog where I'll post some content on Locals as well. And Locals and Patreon are going to be huge for this radio show and podcast. I really would hope that you go check that out. Let me know what you think. And any feedback would be appreciated. You can tweet me at Matt Forner or on my show page at Matt Forner Radio. Go like my page on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Matt Forner Radio. Or if you'd like to get any questions answered, you'd like to email me, you can. It's mattfornerradio@gmail.com. That's mattfornerradio@gmail.com. Thanks so much for checking out this radio show and podcast. Please support the show by subscribing, rating, and reviewing wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's on iTunes or Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, CastBox, Stitcher. Thank you so much for listening to episode number one. Episode number two is coming soon, but I need your feedback. I want to hear from you where you want this show to go, what you're interested in, and let's chat. Thanks so much for listening. This was episode number one of The Matt Forner Show.
Live wherever you stream podcasts. This is The Matt Forner Show. Connect on social media at Matt Forner Radio.